www.ca. Programs funded by the Government of Canada.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on Thursday, January 7th, 2021, the first show of a new year. I hope you had some time to rest, recuperate, and rejoice over the holiday season. Hopefully, in a few months, we will be back safely in theaters and rehearsal spaces. On tonight's show, a look ahead to Centaur's virtual Wildside Festival, just days away from kicking off Montreal Theatre in 2021. My guests include Rose Plotek, Festival Curator and Associate Artist at Centaur.
It's hard for people to go into these more strict regulations and lockdowns, and so I'm really pleased that we can offer them something that's exciting and fresh, and all of this work is so beautiful and well-crafted by these artists, so hopefully as people are stuck at home, you know, it's a little escape that they can take.
Director Katie Wadham of Night Cows.
But I hope that people can go on this journey that takes you to a fantastical, sensual place, but a place that is also grotesque and ugly and hard.
And Leslie Baker, director, creator, and collaborator on Skin.
I saw this image of this door frame, and it really struck me. And I thought, white borders and being able to cross through a doorway. And that grew to thinking about, ultimately, it's about how to have a meaningful life. And do these limitations, how do they hinder our sense of life satisfaction?
But first, some news. Quebec is extending its ongoing lockdown by another month. Theaters, joint cinemas, and other venues in remaining closed until February the 8th. They have been shuttered since early October. In yesterday's update from the province, another big detail, a curfew starts on Saturday, meaning you'll have to remain at home from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. the following day. It's the first policy like this in Canada during the pandemic, and the first curfew since the October crisis back in 1970. This might have an impact on one of the shows we learn about this evening, though the Wild Side this year is just about entirely virtual. One presentation, Skin, is set to be performed live and streamed a few times from the theater. As of now, I believe it will be going ahead next week, but of course, check centaurtheater.com to make sure before you take in a show. But regardless, the festival has a lot of content to share with audiences at home. Each January, Wildside shakes you out of the post-holiday doldrums with a series of short, snappy, and often experimental theater pieces. There's lots of local content and a handful of visiting shows. Some might describe it as a mini fringe, as you can squeeze in multiple short presentations each night, and it's affordable to take a gamble on something you don't know too much about. This year, Rose Plotek returns as the Fest curator, and she's been working to reimagine the show for a virtual platform. And not only that, but a key component of her programming was to support artists who lost projects and earnings this past year. So it's a very local and eclectic crop for 2021. It starts Tuesday, and there are 5 shows premiering each night. Then you can watch them anytime after the fact. We touch on philosophy, the question of how to live well, cultural appropriation, feminism, and the future of the Centaur itself. The series is free, but you can make a donation at centaurtheater.com. And if you want to know more about up-and-coming artists, Rose has also developed a side series called Catalyst that lets you meet several artists who are currently developing work for the theater. Rose Plotek spoke to me earlier this week. She had just gotten a look at the completed performances right before I called her. Hello, Rose. Happy New Year. Welcome back to Upstage. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me back. I'm excited to talk to you about the Wildside Festival.
As am I. This is something to look forward to in 2021. This is a good thing about the new year, besides leaving 2020 behind. So how do you reinvent the wild side? I just want to say very quickly that the festival is always a highlight for me because it's so nice after the holidays where you're visiting everybody and you've probably overeaten, overdrunk. It's kind of back to reality, but the wild side is like a bit of a bright spot for me. And I know for a lot of people, because this is something that gets you out of the house during one of the coldest months. And it's something to look forward to and put on the calendar. Okay, I got that out of the way. It's a big task for you to take a festival with that kind of setup and to reinvent it for online.
Absolutely. And when we started this reinvention in the summer, late July, August, we started to kind of reconceive how we wanted to bring the festival to our audiences. We had no idea what the restrictions in January were going to be. So it's been an evolving process. One of the things that we decided early on was that because of the ever-changing circumstances, rather than put out a call for artists to submit projects, I was going to curate without that open call. So I approached a handful of artists, all based in Montreal, and invited them to make a project for this unusual time and tried to allow them to, you know, imagine how they might use their time and their creativity and the restrictions that they were working under to create something new for this circumstance. So that was our first way that we approached this, was really inviting people to come and take part in the festival. And so all the four projects are new shows for this context, which in itself is something that's kind of completely new for Wildside. Usually projects would have, you know, either had a premiere somewhere else or they've been traveling, they're kind of on tour. So that was a kind of our first foray into something new. And then, of course, the challenge was to create projects that were going to work for an online platform. And I've been so thrilled and moved and just inspired by the work that these artists have done, some of whom are working with video content for the first time, some of whom are really venturing into completely new territory. It's really been such an exciting thing to watch develop.
It's quite a tall order that you're asking for, right? You just mentioned some people are trying out new medium. You're asking for people to be creative and also knowing that it's going to be online, right? Did anyone balk or say no or have questions, like come with you with a long list of questions when you approach them?
Well, certainly a few of the artists were people that I had been in conversation with for Wildside in the before time, pre-COVID.
Yeah.
That conversation had kind of already started, and when I approached them to say, do you want to take on this challenge, definitely it gave everyone pause, but I've been so excited that no one said no or backed down from the challenge. Everyone really, like, put their creativity and their ingenuity to work here, and so I'm actually very happy to say that everyone that I approached for this year's festival took the plunge, and the results are really exciting.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear that. You did mention how everyone is local. It's funny because of the internet, you could, you know, be zooming into a rehearsal, a reading, a play, anywhere in the world, right? And a lot of Wildside is traveling productions, as you mentioned. It's a neat chance to, in the middle of January, see like an improv duo coming from Vancouver or a burlesque artist from Japan, right? So why was it important to reach out to Montreal artists for you?
That's something that the Centaur, that Ida Holmes, the artistic director of the Centaur, has really wanted to put some energy into, is our local community. Because it's such a hard time that we're all living through, and it's especially difficult for artists. And so we really wanted to be able to, help and give resources to people who are working within our community. What's so amazing about all of these projects is that inevitably the artists who have made the work are actually working with people across the country. So it's kind of interesting that we focused on the kind of primary artist is Montreal-based, but a lot of them are working with collaborators from other places in the country. And that's one of the things that the pandemic has really highlighted and made accessible or kind of reshaped the way that people work, is that we're working with people from across the country because all of a sudden we're all working online. And the theater community in Canada can feel quite regional because it's just such a big country.
Right.
And so it's really great for people to be able to say, well, I'm here in Montreal, but my collaborator is in Edmonton, and we can actually make something together. Or I'm here in Montreal, and my puppeteer is in Toronto, and my actor is currently based in Paris. And so we can all contribute in this, you know, online platform to make the work together. So though we've really put our energy into supporting our local community, it's kind of great the way that that support has like sprung out of the city and across the country and even across the ocean.
Well said. Rose Plotek, Wildside curator and Centaur's associate artist, joining me to talk about Wildside, which is getting underway next week and running for 2 weeks, all online, all free. So let's dig into the actual shows. Can we start with Greg MacArthur's piece? Because I'm a radio person. I love audio podcasts, anything to do with your ears. And this is very different. It is an audio tour of the theater.
So it's an audio tour of the theater as it moves through time. It actually takes us decades into the future and envisions what this building, this incredible historic building that houses the Centaur Theater, might evolve into in this kind of slightly science fiction, kind of futuristic, at times quite dark image of what the actual building on Saint-François-Xavier might evolve into in the future. And Montreal artists, audiences will know Greg. He's been in and out of Montreal for himself for decades and has been back, based in Montreal now for a few years. And he's really kind of created this amazing, imaginative, science fiction, kind of playful future for this building. And he's working with Jesse Ash, who's an amazing sound designer and musician based in Montreal, and what they've crafted is really exciting.
Okay, so it's definitely at the top of my list. It's actually the title of it is The Address of Centaur, 453 Saint-François-Xavier.
Right.
And you can get that at Centaur's website. Everything is going to be on the website, right?
That's right. On the Wildside site, each show has its own page, and the performance itself is available on that show's page.
There is a show called Black Balloon Lila. I think this is a show that has a connection to the outdoor festival that the theater had presented in late summer, right?
That's right. So this piece was written and directed by Sophie El-Assad, who's mostly known in the city for her costume design.
She had she had 24 nominations or something like that at the Metas.
Right.
For last
she was
season.
She against herself, I think, in three categories at the Metas. Fifth competition. And so she's been evolving this piece, Black Balloon, in various iterations. So we saw one iteration that was part of the Portico project that we had on the steps of the Centaur in September. And then we invited Sophie to continue to evolve her work in the context of Wildside. And she's done some work with the May to develop the piece with Playwrights Workshop. So it's really what's been great about this project for Sophie is that she's kind of evolved it in stages. So we get a little glimpse of what I imagine one day will be a much larger piece as it all comes together.
There is Night Cows, which I love the title. This is an abridgment of a story that actually has roots from decades back here in Quebec.
That's right. So they're right writer, the original writer of the text, Jovette Marceau, was a Quebec-based Indigenous writer. And this team, led by Katie Wadham, has had, again, many incarnations of this project, Night Cows, originally performed by Elinor Monti, and so in-person performed. And this time, they've done an amazing shadow puppet piece that they are working with, a recording of Elinor's voice and these incredible shadow puppets. And it's got a beautiful sonic landscape. And it's just a stunningly gorgeous piece.
Okay, so that is Moon Cows, which is so terrific. And I think will interest people, especially because of that history that you were talking about. You also have a show from Leslie Baker, who has been at Wildside in the past with a couple of very pushing the envelope shows, if I'm remembering correctly.
Absolutely. I think Leslie likes to push the envelope at all times, yeah. Which is something that we absolutely always welcome here at the Wildside Festival. And this piece we're co-presenting with Théâtre La Chapelle. This is the second year that we have this collaboration with La Chapelle, where we co-present a piece during the Wildside. And so Leslie's piece is going to be actually live-streamed from the theater. It's the only of the five shows that will be live-streamed. And each night, you're going to be able to see a different episode of the show. So it's kind of an accumulation of the complete piece over the course of the week. So each night at 8 o'clock, you can tune in and see a new episode of this piece, Skin, as it kind of evolves live from the theater.
So that is going to be presented live, and that's just Leslie on stage. The top line of the introduction is that the piece was inspired by a photograph of a door and an essay from about 2,000 years ago. That sounds very esoteric. Can you give us any more
Absolutely.
Hints about what Leslie's going to be delving into?
Well, Leslie's work is very physical. It's got this kind of dreamlike landscape. She's working with video and sound. It's, in fact, not just Leslie on stage. There's a couple other performers. So it takes you into this quite, like, dream, surrealist kind of world. And, you know, it's kind of about human existence. So it's both large in scope and small all at once.
And finally, the Whiteface Cabaret, created performed by Lady Vanessa Cardona and Todd Houseman. This is satire, right?
That's right. And so I met Todd when he was a student at the National Theatre School here in Montreal. And he's an amazing improviser and creator. And him and Lady have been collaborating for years now. They created initially a show called Whiteface, and then from that they kind of evolved their work into the Whiteface Cabaret, where they essentially are these two characters, Mr. and Mrs. White, and they host a cabaret, and each iteration of the piece features new artists collaborating and contributing to the cabaret. And it's satire, it's a lot of mask work, it's really both like biting and funny and kind of off the wall all at once. They're just such exciting artists and I think a really important collaboration and an important part of like an evolution of the kind of work that like young Indigenous artists are making in Canada.
And it's really apropos to a lot of the conversations we're having right now about race and cultural appropriation. And so this is going to really, I think, touch on something that's the conversation that's ongoing. So
Absolutely.
It's incredible. We're still not done talking about the festival itself. So those are the five shows that folks can be checking out. There's also, help me understand some of this. There's another element called mm-hmm. Catalyst. Am I naming that correctly?
Right.
What is
Catalyst
this?
Project. So the Catalyst Project is something that the Centaur has started this year. It's a new initiative, and we're working with 9 different playwrights to develop their work over the course of the season. And so between myself and Ida and a couple other dramaturgs who are working with these writers, we've been working with them to develop their work. A lot of these projects came to us through the application process for the Portico project, and they weren't quite the right fit for a piece that was going to be happening in this kind of large So these 9 artists have been working with us through the season. And so in the context of Wildside, we're going to have 2 days where you'll be able to hear excerpts of their work. And I'm going to have conversations with them about their process and the work that they're evolving.
So that is not this coming weekend, but the weekend after that, to look forward to, the 23rd to the 24th. And in addition, Rose, not only are you the person handpicking and putting all of this together, but if people want to go more deeply into each of the 5 shows we spoke about before, you're going to be doing a pre-show before each one?
That's right. So each show has a premiere night, and before their premiere, I'm going to have a little interview with the artist, the lead artist for each project, and just kind of hear a bit about their process, their project, what it's been like making work in confinement. And it's just a way for people to have a little live taste of what's to come. And those conversations will happen each evening, Tuesday through Friday of next week, before the shows are launched and go live on the website.
And the nice thing, too, is that there's dates and times for all of these shows, but once they're online, they're going to stay online. So if you happen to have a Zoom meeting at that 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, for whatever reason, you'll be able to catch up later.
That's right. Absolutely. And all 4 shows that premiere next week, each of them is between 20 to 30 minutes. So it's kind of like a perfect little evening. You can see a little interview with the artist, watch this 20 to 30 minute piece, and if you want to watch them all at once, at the end of the week, they'll all be available until the 23rd on our website.
It's kind of sad, but it is true that for online stuff, oftentimes shorter is better, right? A lot of Wildside plays in the flesh are 45 to 90 minutes tops. Like, that's the range, but most of them are an hour. But you are kind of tailoring, I think, to people's attention spans at home, which is smart.
Yeah, it's a different way of taking in things. So I think all of these artists very smartly are aware of people's, you know, attention in this new medium.
So Rose, January, the days, they're getting longer, surely but slowly. We are headed into our 2 kind of coldest, dreariest months, the start of the new year. As we speak, we believe that we're going to be, as a province, going into stricter lockdowns. But here's this kind of nice thing that we can tune into online. What's going through your mind as the person who's kind of helming an arts festival on the threshold of a stricter lockdown in Quebec?
Well, mostly I'm thinking about how I'm going to manage having my kid with me all the time again for an extended period of time. It's a whole different way of working, but I'm never sad to spend more time with my kiddo. And I'm just thrilled that even though, you know, it's hard for people to go into these more strict regulations and lockdown, and so I'm really pleased that we can offer them something that's exciting and fresh, and all of this work is so beautiful and well-crafted by these artists. So hopefully, as people are stuck at home, you know, it's a little escape that they can take through their computer into these amazing worlds created by these wonderful artists.
So well put, and so looking forward to all of this. Thank you for this, Rose.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
That was Rose Plotek, Centaur Theatre Associate Artist and Curator of the 2021 Wildside Festival at Centaur, going virtual as of this coming Tuesday. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, creator Leslie Baker brought in many different artists to collaborate on her latest work, How They Created Skin Safely. But up first, Night Cows is one of the other 5 shows on offer. Back in 1979, Quebec writer Javette Marchessault wrote a text that proved to be a seminal part of the feminist theater movement in the province. It has since undergone a few iterations, including the current version, which itself has been in development for a few years. Moon Cow Theater Company uses shadow puppetry and other techniques to bring this animal fantasy to life. It premieres January 15th at 7 p.m. Katie Wadham is the director. We spoke yesterday. Good evening, Katie. Welcome to Upstage. Thank you so much for taking the time. What's going through your mind here as you're getting ready to present Night Cows for Wildside? This is really interesting, actually, because it's been just about a year in development to bring the production to the festival, right?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me. It's been a pretty wild ride to get into Wildside. I had met with Rose about a year ago in person in a cafe right before lockdowns had happened, and she had expressed that she wanted to program Night Cows in the 2021 Wildside Festival, and basically since then we've been trying to figure out how to make it work. And as the lockdown started getting more intense in the fall, we had to completely shift and pivot the entire show. And we reimagined our show in the series Shadow Puppetry.
Having to adjust to doing it online, I know that sometimes it takes a lot of work to kind of adapt a piece, sometimes not quite as much. How much work would you say has it taken to take this live performance and to tweak it for an online production?
It was a lot of work, but I think we've had the almost the same team all the way through with our production, and this is our fifth time doing the show. We mm-hmm. first developed it in 2017, I think, through the Montreal Art Intercultural Center. We did a show there, and we brought it to Toronto, and we did it at Revolution They Wrote, and through various workshop presentations. So our understanding of the text and of the story is very, very deep, and it's very close to us. So I felt very lucky to have collaborators that had been involved all the way through. So we were able to really get to the core essence of the story and of what was happening. And so we actually, the piece by Jovette Marchessault was originally written in the 1970s during the Quebec Feminist Writers Movement. And the original piece is about 40 minutes or so, and we've adapted it down about half the time to do it in a digital sphere. And in terms of adapting it into shadow puppetry, I've never directed a puppetry show before, so it was a learning curve. But Alex, our puppeteer, and Myrna, who is our puppetry consultant, were just amazing, and it was very easy to work with them, and everyone brought such great ideas, so I felt very lucky. It was smoother than I thought it was going
to
be.
I'm so glad to hear that. And it's kind of crazy to think about taking something that's already quite short and having it, as you're saying, 40-something minutes down to 24. It's quite impressive. Let's get into what the story is about, Night Cows. You just actually touched on the fact that this goes back almost 40 years to a theatrical text. It's actually quite a foundation piece by Jovette Marchessault. Can you tell me a bit about Jovette and what she was trying to do with this, with Night Cows?
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm speaking from my understanding and my interpretation of her and her work in the piece. Jovette is a mixed Quebecois and Indigenous ancestry, and she was very prevalent during the Quebec Feminist Writers Movement in the 70s, and she actually started out as a visual artist and a sculptor, and she did these really beautiful paintings and these works of women rising out of the earth, and she had this very sort of fantastical view of women and creating these alternate realities where women could be free and could be free of the shackles of patriarchy. So through this story, it's about a vachette or a calf, and it's at dusk, and she's watching her mother, who is a cow, removing the shackles of the day and society and becoming this sensual and grotesque night cow, and they fly into the sky, into the Milky Way, and they go meet the crows who give them back their female history every night.
It's beautiful. It sounds almost folkloric almost. Do you know if she was pulling from any kind of mythology or folk tales?
I don't know about like specific tales, but I do know from what I've researched, she was very close with her Indigenous grandmother and spent a lot of time with her and on the land. And like, for example, like crows are very important characters in many Indigenous stories.
I noted a review from the production back in 2019 that it feels like a play for today because of building off what was obviously a feminist statement back in the late 70s and this kind of renewed awareness of Indigenous culture and artistry, but also renewed interest in feminism today. What kind of conversations were you having with your collaborators as you kind of thought back to what did it mean then and what are we trying to say today? What were you guys talking about?
Yeah, so we were, when I first read the text, it was I was really drawn to it because I'm also of mixed settler and Indigenous ancestry. I'm English, Irish, and Franco-Ontarian and Anishinaabe. So I felt this very deep connection to the way that Jovette wrote, and at the time when I first read it, I was still in school, and Eleanor, who's the audio performer for this rendition of the show, but she acted it for every other rendition of it that we did. She is of Francophone ancestry, and yeah, we had this really interesting intercultural dialogue within the piece that also lived within us as artists. So yeah, it was a really interesting place to explore that. And yeah, for me, it speaks a lot to it's like, because it is set within our world, but not, and it's in this fantastical space, it can be interpreted in many different ways. But for me, it's like, it feels like a metaphor for colonization and a metaphor for how Indigenous women have been treated and how we need to fight the fight and how we need to keep going back to our histories and our stories, and that's how we will go forward.
It's a lot of powerful stuff. Speaking with Katie Wadham, who is the director of Moon Cows, which will be part of Centaur's Wildside Festival, the original text dating back to 1979. There's been lots of different iterations of the play and this production itself, which has been adapted to being online. We did just talk about how the show is going to look and what elements are in there. And I want to turn back to that. I love that there's puppetry that's part of this. How did you work to develop, you know, how this was, it seems like a very visual kind of story, talking about a cow transforming at night. You know, how do you depict that on stage? Can you tell me about the conversations you had with Alexandra, your puppeteer, when it came to developing the look and the feel, what you guys were going to be doing during the show?
Actually, like a very open conversation between me, Alex, Myrna, our puppetry consultant, and Hannah, our video and sound editor, and also Anna Jane McIntyre, who also designed some puppets. And it started with me creating a storyboard that I thought we could just have as like anchor points, and then I just kind of did these really funny scribbles and sent them to everyone. And I'd also asked everyone to go through the script and just let me know of like images that came up for them. And then, yeah, I don't know. We just kind of worked, I guess, a bit organically from there. We used the design for the main sort of night cow character that you see depicted in the show. It's a woman's body with udder breasts and a cow skull head with horns. That's actually based on a poster design that Sophie Marisol had done for the original production. So we sort of had her as the focal point, and then the world kind of went around that. And I made a lot of the puppets. A lot of it came from impulse. I don't know. I work a lot through impulse. Mm-hmm. And then Anna in the original production had made this beautiful wooden mobile of crows that was hanging from the ceiling. So she made a whole bunch of crow puppets for us and a whole bunch. We had this beautiful screen printed foliage that she had done in the original show. So she actually made like puppets of the foliage. It was just a very collaborative process, and I made all like so many different puppets, and I mailed them all to Alex, and we kind of saw what worked and what didn't work in terms of what looked good on the screen, and we used like a school projector that projected onto a screen, so we could play the puppets on the projector screen, but also in front of this canvas screen that it was projecting on. We had these like interesting different like layers of puppets that we could play with. And then because we were filming everything, we could also overlay the videos.
Oh, that's so cool.
Shadow puppetry is really magical and you can do so much with it. So it's almost sometimes overwhelming the possibilities that you can do. But we use lots of different cool stuff. We also use like water, which looks really interesting.
Yeah. Did you have any concerns about how it would translate into a filmed version that people watch on their computers as opposed to being, you know, in the audience with seeing the shadow puppetry?
I think at first when I was told that we would have to do it all digital, I was very scared and I didn't know fully how to translate the show. But then once I realized that shadow puppetry was the way to do it, then it became very clear to me. I think I was a little bit worried about losing the corporeality and the fleshiness that we had in the stage show, because Eleanor is this amazing mover and is so connected to her body and the story is so within her body. I was worried that we were going to lose that element of the show. But I feel because Eleanor did the audio text and she knows it so well and it's so deep within her, I feel like it came through in different ways, in the way that she recorded it and the way that she breathes with the text. And there are all these other possibilities that we could do that we could have never done on stage. So it opened up all these other doors as well.
You can kind of choose to look at it instead of a limitation, right? As a chance to do things differently, to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
The other neat thing about...
Yeah, we could really... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
We could really focus on the story and tell the story, because we could just have these images that are a bit slower, and then you can just really listen to the text.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, speaking of the text, Eleanor Lamothe, who you just mentioned there, is also doing the audio performance for this particular piece. And, you know, when you were kind of expecting that this would be done in person in January 2021, you were actually thinking about how to bring her over to Montreal because she's based in France at the moment, correct? How did you manage to collaborate with her on different continents?
It was really fun. It was really interesting. She's in Paris right now. She's at Jacques Lecoq studying clowns. And she was able to borrow a microphone from one of her classmates who does podcasts. And she recorded the entire show in her tiny little studio in Paris. And she actually got COVID partway through our process as well. There's like many roadblocks, but it was really interesting. It was hard with the time difference as well, because she's 6 hours ahead of us.
Yeah.
So we'd be having meetings and she would get very tired towards the end of our meetings. But the great part was that when she recorded the audio, we just worked from that. So then the sort of rehearsal sort of week and a bit that we did, and it was rehearsal and filming, she actually didn't need to be present, which is pretty cool.
Okay. We were making taking lemons and making lemonade, I think, in other words. Is she doing okay now after having contracted COVID?
She's healthy and good, and she's doing great.
And maybe not able to be there for the live performance, considering the six-hour time difference would put her awake, I guess, at 1 a.m. or so. But we'll be able to watch it online afterwards. One last question for you. What do you hope people come away thinking or having in mind after they've seen Night Cows?
I hope it takes people on a journey, and I hope, I don't know, I'm always just interested to see what metaphors come out of it for other folks, because I feel like because I have a very certain lived experience, I see it through through a particular lens. But I hope that people can go on this journey that takes you to a fantastical, sensual place, but a place that is also grotesque and ugly and hard, but like through revisiting these stories and unearthing these painful histories, we're able to go forward, hopefully in a more positive way.
Katie, I'm really excited to seeing the piece. It sounds like it's going to be really evocative and haunting. And congratulations on putting this together over the past year for an entirely different visioning of it, almost. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That was Katie Wadham, director of Night Cows. It premieres Friday, January 15th at 7 and will be available on demand afterwards as part of the Wildside Festival. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, taking a look at the virtual 2021 edition of Wildside, coming to you from the Centaur Theater in Old Montreal to your device at home starting this Tuesday. What does it take to live a good life? It's something we all wrestle with, whether you read philosophy or self-help books or like to talk it out with friends. Leslie Baker's latest piece works to answer that question in a show that derives inspiration from a writer who was alive 2,000 years ago, and as well as a very old picture of a doorway. The show was called Skin, and Baker worked with Emma Tibaldo and Joseph Schrag to develop the dreamy piece, which has quite a full team behind it, both behind the scenes and on stage. Leslie spoke with me yesterday. Good evening, Leslie. Welcome back to Upstage. How have you been?
Oh, you know, hanging in, like the rest of the world, I guess, but pretty good overall. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Skin is something that's been, I think, in development for the last couple of years, I think. But there's a lot of people involved in this production, which is really neat. Do you want to start there?
Sure, yes. Yes. Well, this project was born out of a conversation between Emma Tibaldo and myself. And so we spoke and conceived of this project together and embarked on it in the Playwrights Workshop's interdisciplinary unit. And we were very interested in the idea of boundaries and borders and started to spend time thinking about various forms of boundaries, skin, psychological boundaries, etc. And so then she and I had started the project, and then we started bringing in other collaborators, kind of co-creators. Joseph Schrag has been involved helping dramaturgically and developing the text, and the movement was created with through improvisation with the performers, so we give them some co-creation credit. And overall, the process is very collaborative, where design folds in to the development of the piece.
So who will be on, yourself will be performing. Do you have people who are going to be on stage with you at the same time?
Well, Emma and I will be performing live, live streamed, and then just to COVID limitations, because we needed to limit the amount of people in the space and on the stage, We do have some of the other performers have been pre-recorded, so it'll be a blending of pre-recorded image with live streamed image.
Okay. That sounds, it sounds technically complicated to be doing that. Is that approach more difficult than actually, I mean, if we could have everybody on stage, that would be awesome. But is it technically difficult to kind of figure out how you're going to have people on stage through pre-recordings while you're performing as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me because I've never really worked in this way. So in a way, it's been, on the good days, it's a very exciting embarkment into a different way of working and a different medium, and on challenging days, I'm like, what did I get myself into? But it is technically difficult. What we have to do is, it's a blending of taking the recorded image and blending that into the world that's created for digitally. And then we shoot on green, all of it's shot on green screen, and then the live image, yeah, has to be blended into that digital space. So yeah, it's complicated, and we have been working with some good video collaborators to help us with that.
The introduction to it in the kind of the précis on the Centaur website is tantalizing. Inspired by a photograph of a partially illuminated door and Seneca's famous essay on the shortness of life from 49 AD. This sounds random, but I know it will always make sense when you see the show itself. Can you tell me about the bits and pieces, pieces of inspiration that came together when you and Emma started working on Skin?
Yeah, sure. Emma was interested in exploring boundaries of home in terms of aging, and as our bodies, we experience limitations as we age and becoming more and more enclosed in the house, and I was interested in psychological issues of around leaving a home. And then I saw this image of this door frame, and it really struck me. And I thought, why it borders and being able to cross through a doorway. And that grew to thinking about, ultimately, it's about how to have a meaningful life and do these limitations. How do they hinder our sense of life satisfaction? And then through, you know, the usual kind of contemplating themes around a creation, a devised work, then came across this essay by Seneca. And that really gave us a nice grounding in this idea of, yeah, how do you make life meaningful? And what is that definition for people? And then what do we do in our lives to inhibit that?
Is Seneca...
To satisfy it, sorry. Yeah.
No. Is Seneca one of the Stoic philosophers that people are so keen to read into lately?
Well, I know he's a Stoic philosopher. His popularity at the moment, I'm not sure, but I'll follow your lead on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a Stoic philosopher. And I don't know that I agree with him, but... It gave a nice context for thinking about things. Yeah.
Now, I think that satisfying, like how to lead a good life almost is almost the quest in and of itself, right? Is to figure out how you're going to lead your own life in a way that works. I'm curious to know if for you and Emma or any of your other collaborators, if over the course of developing it, did you find your own ideas about what is a good life, a good satisfying life, challenged or changed through the course of working on this?
Well, I mean, certainly through working on this, and it made me want to more, to live a life that feels rewarding so that I don't get to the end, whenever that is, especially with our COVID threats. There's too many regrets. Now, some of the things that we look at we've talked about is, you know, Seneca advocates for, you know, working hard and accomplishing things, and that, you know, make the most of every minute. But, you know, then we also look at Well, maybe it's just good to smell the roses and to live in the moment and have meaningful relationships with nature and other people in our lives. So I can't say I know, I don't have an answer for myself right now. I don't know that the other team has. It's really been about questioning it and reckoning, facing that, you know, taking, as we say in the play, an audit of our time spent. And are we satisfied with that? And I think ultimately for me, there'll probably always be some regret, but at least I can try to minimize that through the potential regret. Yeah.
I'm speaking with Leslie Baker, who is presenting Skin next week. She is director, creator, collaborator, and performer. It's going to be live, unlike the other shows. Leslie, what is that? What are things like right now? The other shows have been pre-recorded, so they'll have an opening night, but then you can watch it anytime you want. With everything that's going on, the uncertainty about, you know, non-essential work, what is essential and all that, has it been stressful these past few days dealing with the kind of changing situation?
Yes. I mean, we've changed our approach on this project, you know, multiple times since March, and we thought we were in a good direction. And then now, you know, as we have this change. And so, I mean, certainly we've all had to learn to be very adaptable and flexible, because then that feels like it lowers my stress level a bit. like, okay, we're going to go that direction now. Okay, whoops. Tomorrow morning we'll find out the next direction. I mean, completely on. Sometimes I can look at it and just feel, you know, overwhelmed and lose my energy and passion for doing the work. At the same time, it does feel nice to have something to work towards in this time and try to have an offering to, you know, whatever part of the world who wants to watch and tune in.
It keeps you focused.
Yeah. And certainly really interesting just to, and hopefully, knock on wood, we will arrive at a post-COVID, and besides having stories about what it was like to try to create something semi-live in these times, it certainly has been interesting to have to deal with all the issues that come up, like when are we masked, can we film unmasked, can we live stream unmasked, how do we, besides the rules, like how do we also keep ourselves safe and sound, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's a complete, it's totally changed the game.
Yeah. So it's been interesting to wrestle with that, and even notions of theater and live. I mean, we certainly thought, well, we could just, you know, we could do a recording. We could record everything and create something that's a recorded image, and we don't have to have this stress we're facing now and this questioning. But a lot of the team and the main, you know, creators and collaborators were still intrigued with how can we still maintain some sort of theatrical element, some type of that live and risk that happens in theaters. So that's why we've tried to keep at it in this way. Yeah.
Well, I spoke with Rose Potek, the curator, yesterday, and one of the things she highlighted about Skin is just your kind of signature as a performer, I think, which is dreamlike worlds on stage. Do you agree with that evaluation of your work and your style?
Yes, I'm always been attracted to, in when I devise work and create work, a kind of a poetic performance. And a lot of openness and dreamlike quality to it. But I think I try to leave it a bit open and let the audience, the viewer, have space to make their connections.
I'm looking forward to having that opportunity myself as an audience member next week.
That'd be great. That'd be wonderful. Yeah.
Leslie, it's been such a pleasure to check in with you and to find out about this work. It sounds like the right kind of meditative thinking that we need in this moment.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. Yeah, oops, the snowplow is going by.
Winter in Montreal.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you. Stay safe.
That was Leslie Baker, director, collaborator, and performer on Skin. That show is expected to be performed from Centaur from January 18th to the 21st at 8 p.m. streaming live. They are working to figure out how that will happen under the ongoing restrictions. You can check out more about Skin, Night Cows, and the other programming we discussed tonight at centaurtheater.com. The festival begins Tuesday, January 12th, and the series is all free, but you can make a donation at centaurtheater.com. I'm hoping to speak with more artists on the other shows for next week. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard Rose Plotek, curator of Wildside, director Katie Wadham of Night Cows, and Leslie Baker, director and performer of Skins. A big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under Archives. Thank you to Tamara at CKUT for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Until next time, stay home, stay safe.
This is Derek Sager, stay-at-home dad and pre-COVID comedian. I'm sorry, I'm eating a hot turkey sandwich. Again. I made tons for the holidays. I'll probably still be eating turkey till Valentine's Day. But it's time we talk about our resolutions. Please, stay at home and limit your contacts. Let's protect each other. And if anyone has a recipe that calls for 17 pounds of leftover turkey, I really need that. Like, really. Let's keep our spirits up.
A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Looking to become bilingual or promote bilingualism in Canada? Look no further. Apply for the Odyssey or Explore program for the chance to improve your French or help young people improve their English. You'll immerse yourself in another region's language and culture, make new friends, and have experiences that will stay with you forever. Many people say the Odyssey and Explore programs have changed their lives. To find out more or to apply, visit EnglishFrench.ca. Programs funded by the Government of Canada.
Welcome to tonight's edition of Grey Matters, the January 7th, 2021 edition. Happy New Year. Tonight on the show, we'll be presenting a lecture entitled Capitalism, the Pandemic and the Two-Party Monopolies. Lecture delivered by Kali Akuno, co-founder and executive director of Cooperation Jackson, a grassroots eco-socialist organization building solidarity, economic solidarity in Mississippi and beyond, and Richard Wolf, who is a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst and currently visiting professor at the New School in New York, called by the New York Times America's most prominent Marxist economist. Without further ado, here's tonight's edition of Grey Matters, Capitalism, the Pandemic, and the Two-Party Monopoly.
We're living through a time in which American capitalism is in decline. The real deep reason why we failed in the face of the pandemic, why we failed to be ready for the umpteenth economic crisis, is because we are a system that is disintegrating. We are headed now under the leadership, unfortunately, of the same two monopoly parties to increasingly dangerous confrontations with China.
That's Richard Wolf, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Kali Akuno and Richard Wolf on capitalism, the pandemic, and the two-party